We do.
Yes, and there's certain things that even want to get into as far as African Americans going to the University of Illinois, they're mm-hmm. even going to a 4-year college, you know, especially the University of Illinois. And we're going to tackle that. We're going to get into that, even though it may even be in law school. Mm-hmm. So we'd definitely like to invite you two to come down and invite you, Master Barber, Mr. Eddie.
Oh, yeah. Thank Find you for sharing Eddie with Sutton us. At Facebook.com or Eddie Sutton at Twitter, specialtouch.com. You can find me on First Avenue. Come in, get a haircut, you know, chit-chat.
And also, we want to thank Mr. Chris Williams, the one and only Mr. C-Dub, who's doing a lot of things in the community, especially on promotion and events. We want to thank him for stopping down and sharing. Minister Chris Williams, too. Minister Chris Williams, for coming down and sharing with us on today. Again, this brings us to the end of our program on today of Power and Praise. Join us every Sunday from here, from the time of 9 until 11 o'clock a.m., where we're streaming live right here on WFT.org, 90.1 FM, 113 North Market Street in Champaign. This takes us up to our next show, and what we're going to do, we're going to do a transition and get you prepared for your day. God bless you. We love you.
Of LA. I said, yes, ma'am, is everything okay? She said, come over here, I got something to say. You shouldn't be on TV acting that way. I said, whoa, you'd rather I be fake. Want me to act like I don't make mistakes? Sorry, ma'am, I ain't cut that way. I gotta keep it 100 all day. And your attitude is worse than mine. And you could be a little bit more kind. And if you want folk to come to your church, we all gotta do some work to be like Jesus.
Be like Jesus.
Down the railroad track, it makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. Lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me wanna go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest.
This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFT, Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. Today is July the 17th, and this is a program every week about the environment, things that are happening in our area, and anything else that Dave cares to talk about.
So, this week, it's North American Prairie Conference. It starts this afternoon, and the main effort is on Monday, with field trips on Tuesday, and sessions on Wednesday. It's extremely close. Last meeting was in Winnipeg. Some meetings have been in Texas, Ohio, Iowa. So this is close. It's at Bloomington. Illinois State is the sponsor. The title is From Cemeteries to National Tall Grass Prairies. And cemeteries, Jamie Ellis will be taking a field trip to cemeteries. Other people will be talking to cemeteries. There's always a difficulty because cemeteries inspire mowing. But if you can find a cemetery that has original soil and original plants, then you really need to work with the cemetery authorities to try and preserve that prairie. I know it looks nice and decent and memorial to have all the gravestones mowed, but really, it's your heritage. And Roger Anderson, who is running the show, and with a lot of assistance from other people, is quick to say that we're down to very, very little prairie left. It's almost like 12 acres of preserved prairie, and we deserve to have more than that. That's preserved, good quality remnant prairie. So there will be various discussion groups, and there will be plenary sessions. We're going to take a Heartland Pathways booth, and we'll take some of our visual material, and we have a handout that's 8 pages long that deals with rail trail prairies and preservation along abandoned railroad lines. We'll get there today and set up a booth and probably sell some T-shirts that say, "Grow it, don't mow it." And they sell quite well. So we're hoping to do that. Give me a call if you have any interest or concern about thoughts there, but it's all in great detail on the web. Go to North American Prairie Conference and you'll get it, and you'll get the details of where to go and what to expect. I think I will run through some of the discussion groups, or they've divided the oral presentations, papers, into various groups, and you can join those groups for a series of different discussions, and the abstracts are there. This is pretty good, because not always do we get the abstracts right there, almost ready for publication. And it's being run very well, and people like Fran Hardy, who have put together the North American Prairie, put together the Prairie State Conservation Coalition, and is in Nature Conservancy and the like, have put a lot of work into this. This is the 24th Biennial Conference, once every 2 years, and this one will be celebrating the fact that Peter Schramm from Knox College put this conference together almost 50 years ago. So let's run through some of the discussion groups. A major one is prairie restoration and management issues including grazing, patch burn grazing, summer burns, and herbicides, etc. So if you join that, you probably have prairies that you manage and that you have teas lawn or sweet clover or plants and sometimes creatures that are we do not enjoy. Some of those creatures are very much part of the prairie. So at times we don't get seed from some plants because there's a prairie monster that will, like a weevil, that eats the flower off before it produces seed. The moderator for that site will be Jamie Ellis, who is president of the Grand Prairie Friends and a botanist with the Natural History Survey, Prairie State Institution, associated with the University of Illinois. And he will also be leading a field trip to cemeteries. The second discussion group is managing the below-ground ecosystem. Prairie mutationists and parasites. Well, now, when I look at that section, I'm thinking of a huge prairie at Prairie City in Iowa. It's many thousands of acres and has a wonderful cross-section of a prairie, and it deals with what's underneath. Sometimes a mile of fibrous roots, sometimes a big carrot that might be 10 or 12 feet deep on something like a silphium. And there is a range of bacteria and fungi that we're beginning to find out that they all relate and they can mutate. So part of the title here is mutation. And it's a little bit like humans. They're beginning to find that the bacteria and microorganisms that are in, on our skin and in our hair are somewhat essential. Sometimes they can be provocative. Sometimes they can be very essential to providing essential biochemicals. And so we're just mirroring what comes in a prairie. And so if you're deciding what a prairie is, you have to be very careful because you don't exactly know what's been mutating in the last 6 weeks or 6 years or in a millennium. The next section is seeding for the future, a discussion of issues surrounding native seed and plant production. Okay, well, we pick ceanothus or New Jersey tea, which is rather hard to have in a nursery situation. It likes its friends and relatives. We don't always know who or what are the friends and relatives. We do know that we don't want it mowed, so in one place we have a lot of mowing, and that's a problem too. But we pick that seed. It ripens variously, so sometimes you'll have green seed on the same plant as ripe seed. And that makes it very hard to harvest with a mechanical means that would take all the seed at one time. So this means hand-picking of seed, and that makes it expensive. When you're thinking of the Kickapoo Trail, which has a lot of prairie on it, then that prairie will be augmented and perhaps replaced where there's been construction damage. And that will require a lot of volunteers to pick seed. Now, you don't always know what you're picking. If you are a neophyte, you may have to be educated as to what is what. I have had situations where I haven't explained fully what the seed collecting detail was, and somebody has collected ragweed for me. And so we have to be careful and explain that. There are ways of collecting. Sometimes you can put a coat on a dog and send it through the prairie, and it'll pick up the most recent of the ripe seeds. Sometimes you can go out with a wire whip that has a bag on it and collect the seed at that time. You have to be careful. If you're going to make a real prairie, then you don't want to have a September prairie or a July prairie. You want to have a generous range of seeds. So that's a question. There's also questions about what is a real prairie, and that may be another section. So seeding is important, and if you have seed of a rare type, you may be wanting to send it off to some seed organization like Prairie Moon. You have to annotate it as to where it comes from, and then get sold back to within 50 or 100 miles, depending on what sort of prairie person you are. You are going to be a prairie specialist, a researcher, or are you going to be putting in a community rough and tumble simulated prairie? So the latter, you can probably take more rough and tough seed, whereas the researcher might want to have the detailed knowledge of where the seed has come from. You may even want to have someone take a few shovelfuls of soil, because if you're collecting the seed, the seeds, the roots that you're going to grow, the sort of plants that work well with the bacteria and fungi in the soil, so you need to inoculate your soil, especially if you're working with an old cornfield or soybean field where there's soil has been herbicided, and perhaps the original population of microorganisms has been devastated. Okay, the fourth one is prairie restoration for landscaping. Issues associated with urban prairies, pollinator habitat, prescribed burns, and neighbor relationships. Well, we have a beauty just across the road. It's an urban prairie. It's a pocket prairie. It's about the size of a house block. And it is a wonder to people who visit it. It allows us to give an idea of what a prairie looks like. Some of our prairies are 20 miles away, so we can't take people to them. And at the moment, that prairie is, some of it is 6 and 8 feet tall. Some of the dock are probably 10 feet tall. And it's like, wow. But we also attract people who like the retreat and enjoy being there. We have a few people who smoke pot there occasionally, and that gets us into difficulties because we can easily have a fire and accumulated litter. So when you're talking about relationships with the neighbors, you have to be able to have trees that are simulated trees, like serviceberry, that don't have roots that lift buildings up and make them dance. So yes, there are a few clues that people have that when they're doing downtown urban prairies. There are a lot of people who are working with milkweeds for butterflies. There are people who are doing pollinators. Since we have a monoculture of corn and soybeans, that's not exactly enjoyable for a bumblebee or a regular bee. And then the urban communities with small plots in their garden are really encouraged. It may be that you want to put in a small prairie, but if you have any trees, then the trees are going to give shade. So you have to figure on a prairie that has gobs and gobs of light. Otherwise, your plants will become not perennials, but annuals, and you'll have to plant them every year. Number five is fire frequency and season of burning. Opportunities for coordinating research across tall grass regions, exploring potential to coordinate season of burning, research using prairie restorations at field stations, biological stations around the region, tall grass prairie region. So fire is essential because the litter builds up, and in nature that would have been burned every perhaps 3 or 5 years by lightning strike. Then you have native populations realizing that this made a prairie better, and not only plants did better, but the animals in there that they would hunt did better. So you lose a few creatures to fire, but wow, it makes a difference. The litter allows the heat and light to get into the prairie. The roots aren't damaged, and the prairie comes back after burn. The question is, when should you burn? If you burn the same time every year, that's going to encourage a rough and tough prairie. Some prairie creatures do not like to be burned constantly. There's another problem that a lot of the prairie animals will hibernate during winter, like a bunch of crawdads may have had holes which are discovered by snakes, and the snakes get together and they hibernate where there's a little bit of warmth. When they come out, they're cold-blooded animals, and they like to be in warm situations. So unfortunately, if we have rattlesnakes, then they will sometimes end up on somebody's stoop. And there's a temptation to take out your Cork 45 and get rid of the snake. But if you understand the situation, the snake is there, relatively torpid, and getting warmth. So there's a discussion at the present time about sharks that likewise have a need to be in warm situations. So they sometimes get into shallows and they get into strife because people don't like sharks in shallow situations where people like to wade and swim. The firing can be in wintertime. You may have spots of snow, but that sort of thing can happen and encourage different creatures. That's an interesting sidelight. Then the sixth discussion group is connecting land trusts, organic farms, natural areas for greater landscape impact. Prairies do not enjoy being one thin line on an abandoned right-of-way. It's not how prairies grow up. They grow up in thousands of acres. And so there is a constant drive to combine prairies so they make a significant mass. In some cases, like at Nechusa, there's an attempt to gather up enough land to make a statement or allow various species to sort themselves out according to soil type or moisture or associates or and so there's a difference between gathering up the only prairie we have left on a railroad right away and having a 1,000 acres or 3,000 acres of prairie. Do we have 3,000 acres of prairie in East Central Illinois? No. The Barnhart's were heading for 400 acres, and they do have quite a bit of prairie that's beyond thin, narrow sites. In Manhattan, Kansas, there's a huge Flint Hills prairie, but that's not a tall grass prairie. We're talking about tall grass prairies. And how do you get the organizations together? David and I have both been to the Prairie State Conservation Coalition, which is about a 10-year-old organization. And their concern is how to get trusts together, how to accredit your natural area. The IRS has a problem that sometimes large blocks of land are bought with the concept of natural area preservation, because it reduces, it puts companies into a lower tax break, and that gives them, and you can actually make money out of donating a prairie. On the other hand, that might be a prairie that doesn't have much prairie on it. So then it's important to have a system of accreditation. So you have people like Jack White who specialize in determining whether this is a decent prairie or not, and whether it's biodiverse, and if it has biomass, and how has it been managed. So that's a section that's rather important. And they bring in two local agencies, an Iroquois Valley Farms and the Midwest Agricultural Restoration Services, to talk about what they do and have done to restore prairies. And for the next generation, that there will be a continuing effort to gather up some land that is biodiverse and broad enough in its area to allow the interactions that would be normal in a prairie. So the next thing that is on the agenda is plenary sessions. Plenary sessions are where speakers have been invited to speak on topics of interest to the general crowd. So this is not where you're looking at little classrooms with small groups of people at discussion groups. You're looking at an auditorium with perhaps 300 or 400 people, and they're being presented a general issue. The keynote speaker in the morning on Monday will be Michael Jeffords, who is an entomologist, but he's also been a person that interprets the field. He and his wife, Susan Post, travel extensively on the prairie. They present picture essays, but you know, picture essays are going to be ephemeral. If you're looking at that spider and that web, that banana spider, and how it collects an insect and wraps it up and preserves it, you can get that on TV. But the TV is gone very shortly, so some people need to have books published where the author will give you a chance to not only view the spider once, but to come back and view it again and perhaps to listen to a little bit of poetry about the spider and inspire you to think about how that spider doesn't get tangled up in its own sticky web. So Michael Jeffers has a Punch and Judy show, which is rather wonderful, and you can see it 25 times and still not have seen it all. And so he will be discussing his work and probably Susan Post's work too. Jeff Walk is another presenter, and he's from the Illinois chapter of the Nature Conservancy. The Nature Conservancy is a big organization that tries to gather up land for preservation purposes. It's not only for prairie, but one of the discussions here will be about wetland in the Kankakee area, which was a basin that was rather wet. It was drained just the same way as we drain Champaign County to allow for agriculture. But it's never been a prime agricultural place. So there was an attempt to buy this area, but there was opposition from the few farmers that are there. So gradually, the Nature Conservancy has been helping to buy acreage, and I think they're up to about 9,000 acres, and eventually they'll coalesce some of these areas and restore them to native vegetation. So Dr. Walk will talk about that. There is Richard Henderson, who talks about natural area inventory. There is the Illinois Nature Preserves Commission has a unit which deals with the assessment of 13 ecosystems in Illinois. Illinois is a long state. At the south, you have Bald Cypress, and it's almost like Alabama or Mississippi Delta. Cypress is very cherished for lumber, and I can remember Dr. Evers, who was a biologist with the Natural History Survey. One day, he went to southern Illinois to visit his favorite Bald Cypress ecosystem, and it was all harvested for lumber. And he was so sad, and it was documented for research purposes, and he was a researcher and a herbarium specialist, and I don't think he ever got over that experience of coming over the hill and finding that everything is gone. So Henderson, I think, will be talking about some of those things. And then there's Dr. Sarah Beyer, and her interest has been, she's got a PhD in biology. Most of these people have PhDs or equivalent. And she's been working with Kansas State and looking at diversity. And so she has the capacity and background to give you an idea of how these ecosystems work and how we can preserve them. That brings me to the schedule, which is starts at 9:30 on Monday, so you have time to drive from your Illinois areas. For us, it's probably about 2 hours. The invited guests will be moderated by Fran Hardy. Fran Hardy is an interesting fellow. He has being regional director for the Department of Natural Resources in this region, so he knows this East Central Illinois region well. And then he has now, with the Nature Preserve, the Nature Preserves Commission and TNC, and he is in charge of land acquisition, which is a tough job, but he does it well. He's also been instrumental in putting together a Prairie State Conservation Coalition, which has run for about 10 years, with him as president for quite a lot of it, but it's now been broadened to other people being president of that group. And Fran has had a big finger in the pie of organizing this conference along with Roger Anderson and a whole bunch of people that fit into places like the Natural History Survey. There'll be several discussions. One is the Nechusa grasslands, which I've mentioned. It's near to Oregon, Illinois, where the Northern Illinois University is, and they have a retreat there. There's a Laredo Taft Center, and Laredo Taft has is very near to the hearts of people like Doug Wade and his family, Doug and Dot Wade. Doug was a professor at the university, and they have a retreat for university people at Oregon. And Doug and Dot put together a prairie in their backyard and sold seed. So some of the seed we bought for the Barnhart Prairie came from Doug and Dot Wade. Doug passed on, and I'm not sure what Dorothy's situation is, but their son took the gene pool from Illinois, from Oregon, to southern Minnesota, where it's done very well. And if you ever want to know about prairie and prairie planting, you should order a catalog from the Prairie Moon. And Prairie Moon will provide the catalog. It's got interesting photographs in it. It tells you if you want to do a wetland, what you might be able to plant. If you're on a dry hill, what you can put in, what you might be able to do with an urban situation, what you might be able to do with 10,000 acres. They're specialists in this, and it started off from Doug Wade and his associates at Northern Illinois University. Nechusa grassland was of very great interest to the Wade family. They gradually helped to acquire it. It's, I think it's owned by the Nature Conservancy, and there'll be a discussion of that. Then it's a question of, can we really restore a prairie? Can we know what it was in 1850? Are we just gardening with prairie plants? And so that is a discussion that's of interest to all people. Then there will be a discussion of the Kankakee sands. You have to know that when the glacial meltways dried up, the wind blew the loose material, the ground up till of glaciation was blown, and there would be sand hills. So in the Kankakee area, you get sand dunes and you get a dry vegetation that is quite nice. I will be going to that field trip. Unfortunately, all the field trips, or most of the field trips, are all-day events, so it goes by bus. But you have to be there early in the morning because some of these buses leave at 7:30. And if you don't arrive at 7:30, you're going to stay home for the duration. The Kankakee Sands interests me because I'm sort of promoting the concept of a national park coming off of 57 at Kankakee, visiting the sand prairies, and coming south more or less parallel to Illinois Central Railroad, or Canadian National now, with an old Route 45 that nestles in against the railroad line. But there's just a few hundred feet of prairie there between the road and the railroad line. And for if you're given the chance to know what you're looking at, then it can be very interesting. And then you come south to places like Loda, where you have a very nice cemetery area that has been left as for future use, but in the meantime, it has grown wonderful prairie. So Grand Prairie Friends has bought 9 acres of prairie, or 9 acres of cornfield around this site, to protect it and to plant it to a simulated prairie, which is doing very well after probably about 10 years. And it almost looks like the real thing that's in the set-aside that has now been purchased by the state, and I think the cemetery has been given other space for future burials. So that's sort of the presentations that are very general. Then you go into contributed oral sessions, and this is where you have small rooms set up for people. And we've discussed already the various categories that you might like to visit. Cultural legacy, education, prairie management, a whole bunch of different things. We do have local people who are involved. I mentioned that Jamie Ellis will be leading a tour to cemetery prairies. That will be an all-day tour. But I also noticed that the Grand Prairie Friends was a partner, an underwriter for the conference. The Nature Conservancy is one of the major promoters. Prairie Moon is in there. And then there's various smaller societies like Shooting Star Society, the Prairie Botany Society, Peoria Botany Society, Wild Ones. They're just a wonderful group of people who are making this conference possible. So Jack White will be there. Jack White has been going by John White, so don't be disturbed by the fact that he's changed his name. We're not quite sure why, but Jack grew up on a farm, and he has a wonderful story about going out with his father to visit a cottonwood tree, which is really a very, very wonderful tree. And when they got there, the tree had been taken down, partially for lumber, but partially to release the land for agricultural crops. And Jack is a specialist in defining what your prairie is, what the species are, what its value is, and it's hard to put a value on things. You can put a value on a corn plant, perhaps, It's harder to put a value on education, for instance, and it's hard to put a value on an ecosystem. So Jack does that sort of work. There's people from the vet school. Marcelo Ridgway will be talking about dogs and smell-o-vision. If you take a dog out into the field and you've asked it to find a microbiochemical that it can smell and we can't, then it can sniff it out and find out things. It can also find dead bodies or other organisms that have died. It can you select species of dog that are good at doing this and are rewarded by the fact that they actually find the goal at the end of this principle of finding things. And you have to hang on to that dog, because that dog can know where the things are, and he can be gone over the hill, and you absolutely know not where the dog is. So you have to follow the dog and note what it is recording. The dog has to be trained. If you're going to pick up a smell, you need to train the dog to smell for a handkerchief, or if you were talking about bee balm and you had something that was very aromatic, then the dog has to know that's what you're looking for, and their reward is some food at the end of the corridor, but it's also a mental achievement. They wag their tail that they've found the thing that you're looking for. It's a little bit like geology. Often geology is discovered by the plants that are on it. So a seam of basaltic material will grow a forest that is quite different from the area around it, which might have been sedimentary rock that has been leached by oceanic activities and then raised up into a mountain, and the tectonic movements have allowed the volcano to come up and spread a different sort of geological material. And that can be very dramatic, so you can see it from 10 mile away. But it can also be very modest, and even if you are going to look at the sedimentary rock, you might find one sandstone slightly different from another sandstone, and you can see the result in the plants growing. If you're in an area which hasn't been leached a lot, then sometimes a bull thistle will indicate to you that there's a fair bit of calcium in that soil. So Marcia will be talking about that, but she will also say something about the vet school. Kerry Helms was in my reading the landscape class a long time ago, and he works as an artist for the veterinary school, and he decided that the veterinary school could well do with it. It's a school that gets its money and its organization from the state of Prairie, and could there be a veterinary Prairie? Well, yes, and that eventually happened, and Kerry did the organization of that, but Marcy will be... She's a professor in veterinary medicine, and eventually that got planted. Grand Prairie Friends was very, very involved. They bought plants. They planted about six grasses, and not extensively, because grasses can take over, And then they had perhaps even 30 different species of plants. There was a sculpted piece in the middle of a, this was in the front end of the veterinary school, and there was a little feeling that the sculpted piece was being inundated by prairie, so there had to be a removal of some of the prairie to provide more ambiance for the sculpted piece. But still, that prairie is very available. It's on Lincoln Avenue in Urbana, and it can be visited by windshield, or you can park and get out and visit the prairie. There's little pathways through it, and they will be sort of overgrown by prairie, but it's a very interesting prairie, and it gives you a chance to look at the different species. The one thing that is interesting here is that you get to meet people that are in doing the same sort of thing but don't always know each other. And so a presentation might be, I can remember a presentation about cemeteries, and this one person had had a lot of problems with trails through the cemeteries, trying to preserve the prairie, whether you put chipped wood down as a trail, is that an insult on the prairie? But then I can remember another cemetery in Iowa where it was on a sand dune, so you had ridges and swales. So what was on the ridge of the sand dune was different from what was in the swale. But it was a cemetery, and huge cemetery funereal trees, like cypress that didn't belong, were planted there years ago. And so with a base of something like 2 feet, they really were shading out this cemetery. So with a lot of cooperation, that cemetery has been preserved some. It's kind of amazing because a road was put right through the middle of the cemetery. And so it's in two pieces. But this is the sort of thing that where you can pick up some ideas with, what would you do with Prospect Cemetery? What would you do with Lotus Cemetery? Where are those little threads of a prairie on St. Mary's Road? How do you find them, and how do you work with them? And how's our time? We've got
1 to 5 minutes.
5 minutes? Yeah. And I would encourage you to get over there. It's, even if you just went to the Wednesday session, you would pick up some ideas. And we have a lot of local groups that have done very well with prairie preservation work. And one of them is in the College of Agriculture, where there was not only a master gardener, but there's a master naturalist. So you can go to that course and do it. And then you can, part of the certificate for doing the course is that you volunteer with different prairie preservation groups. So just recently, the College of Agriculture master naturalists were encouraged to get parsnips out of shortline prairie that runs from Gifford through to Penfield. And that's one of these railroad right-of-way prairies which I really haven't had a lot to do with preserving, but which are very limited expressions of prairie. Expressions of enough, however, that I once took Art Brady out to Gifford to salvage prairie plants out of a budding cornfield. And the corn was 8 foot high, and I was digging up lead plant and other prairie plants there that were no longer going to survive the agriculture and the herbicides. But Art was sort of amazed. How did I know that that was prairie that was in there. Well, you know where the railroad line used to run, and you know how the fields have been taken over. And fortunately, on that particular group, Bloomington Marine, there's been a bunch of people who have preserved rolling hills, and some of the railroad bed has been taken over by trees, but the people have not incorporated it into their adjacent cornfield. They sometimes have taken out the bridges, which makes it hard to walk along these corridors, but we have a little battle of saying to when a line is closed out, like between Dillsburg and Rantoul, can you please save the soils, because these are the only undisturbed soils we have, and then they're only relatively undisturbed. So could you as farmers have the generosity to preserve the dignity of the microorganisms? And but it's very hard, because there's a dollar figure to the agriculture that you can put in. In the urban situations, they have taken over railroad yards and railroad, and there it's not agriculture, but it can be, because you can put in prairie elements here and there to give people an idea of what they're traversing when they ride a bicycle through that corridor. It's only about 3 miles long, but it the sort of corridor that we look at to help people understand what their heritage ecosystem is and was, and we hope will be. But remember that all these ecosystems are dynamic, and so they're going to change with the years. They're going to change with farming practices. They're going to change with climate. They're going to change with a lot of thought for preservation, and we hope that we will get places like Natusa and also Madewan Prairie, which used to be an armory for World War II, that's now going back to being a prairie. It was like 18 farms that were taken over when there was a need for TNT, and we didn't have it when we were invaded in Hawaii by the Japanese, and that is no longer used as an armory. So the railroads were taken out that went to the little dumpsters where, or the little areas where explosives were kept. Those railroad lines have been taken out, and the area is being restored to prairie. I think we're getting near the end.
1 minute.
This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk. WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. And as always, the views and opinions expressed here are solely those of the speakers and nobody else. And Dave has been talking today about the North American Prairie Conference. My understanding is that if people want to, you don't have to pay for the entire conference. You can, as Dave has suggested, drive on over there to Bloomington for the morning of, for example, Wednesday, when there are quite a few of these larger group discussions that he's been talking about. Pay for being there that one day, and then come on home, and don't have to stay overnight, don't have to take your meals over there or anything like that. So if you go online, you can find out all the details if you look for North American Prairie Conference. And go ahead.
Very good information on the webpage.
And you just heard Dave's watch beep, so even his watch agrees. It's now noon. This is WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. We are community radio for East Central Illinois, and it's time now for Shruti, Music of India.